Amelia
and Jazz,
and we are your favorite Sotong sisters. We are back live in Technicolor, dispersed across these new United States.
These new United?
These new United States. I mean, hey, it's been a minute. It's been a minute. We didn't think that we would be back in such a capacity. I didn't plan on being back this soon. We've been on hiatus.
Right.
But so it must be a worthwhile thing for us not only to be back and to be, you know, vocal again, but to be in video.
Yes.
We had to show our brown skin for this one. And y'all are looking good. Let me tell you.
Girl, you do.
These United States look good on us, eh?
Hey.
Right.
So, I mean, this is a special episode for us because this is something we've touched on in our podcast series. There is no mistake about how we feel about our families, how we feel about Black lives, considering that we are Black lives. Our love for Black men, considering that we came from Black men. Married to some, like, I mean, it's a thing. Hey, Ms. Rivers. yeah, and so it's an episode that's really, really dear to our hearts. Let's catch our listeners up a little bit, though. Where are we now? D-Money, where you at?
I am now back in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. I'll make it broad so none of y'all can try to come find me. But I am... in the DC area now, by way of New York. And it's been great being back here in the DC area.
Right. And Jazz, where you at?
I am in Charlotte, North Carolina, loving it here, loving this city, loving my new job, loving my new husband.
Hey.
It's been a whole lot of changes, but it's been good.
Do people still call it North Kakalaki? Is that still a thing?
You know what? I haven't heard any natives say that. I feel like people outside of North Carolina call it that.
I have not heard that. North Kakalaki. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to say correct it then and never say that again.
Where are you at?
I'm back in St. Louis, in a Lou, in the Midwest, just doing it. I think I'm the last of the transplants back. I've only been back here since March, since Corona popped off. Mm. So yeah, these states feeling mighty new to me. Mm. And what a time to be brown in America. I'm struggling right now, y'all. I often think, should I have gotten on that plane? Because G's and P's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that, you know, we've talked about is when you first hear the breaking news, when you first start to see the video footage of the person who's been gunned down, the person who's been choked out, the person who lost their life for no reason, what is your initial reaction? Like, what goes through your mind? What pops up in your heart? What does it feel like?
Right. So that's the thing, right? Because all of this is happening under other circumstances, you know? And so I think, Jazz, I'm always like talking about my mental health to you, mostly because you are the resident counselor. And I think the word that we came up with is just fatigue. To be honest, I can't feel like I'm numb from the images because I've seen so many of them so often, so back to back. I'm numb from just the fatigue of survival anyway, because Corona was already affecting Black people at a disproportionate rate. So how do you feel is a very uncomfortable question, because I don't feel, and I feel like that's not okay to say, but that's where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Dee? How you feeling?
Yeah, I think that's real though, you know, and it is one of those things where it's like people are feeling lots of different things, and every way to feel is okay, even if you're not feeling and you feel like you kind of need to shut off for a moment, that's okay too, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like people are feeling all those things. They're fatigued, they're traumatized, they're scared, they're tired, like we all are feeling all of those things. And I think as being Black in America, you feel those on a daily basis anyway, And then depending on where you live and what your background is, you might feel that more on any given day. But then when we have all of these coming up, like, you know, and we see it in social media, and we have video evidence, and we see these things in the news, it just like, it just kind of explodes it to a different level. And that trauma is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming. It's like your sensory system is on overload because you're getting these videos played back over and over and over. And it's like, you can't escape the news. You can't escape social media. So you're seeing it replay. And like, it does cause trauma fatigue. And I never put that together until Candace said it to me the other day. And I was like, wow, like, I think I'm starting to experience that. And it's like, it's hard to process when you're so bombarded and you're so overloaded with all these images and then everyone's take on the issue and then trying to figure out your own take on the issue and your own feelings. It's a lot. And for me, it's been kind of like a system overload and my system is like starting to shut down. So like yesterday, I felt so tired and I ended up napping. Like I just spent a lot of the day away because I was just so overloaded and experiencing trauma fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How would you describe that? Because I think a lot of people feel what we feel, Jazz, but they don't have the language to describe that and to know, wait, is this what I am? Is this trauma fatigue? Like, how would you just define that really simply for people who are trying to figure out how they feel?
I think it's just kind of like I said, like a system overload. Like you can't really think clearly, you can't process. For me, it was like even interrupting my sleep. Like I've had a couple of sleepless nights recently because I'm just laying in bed and I'm like, I can't, number one, get those images out of my head. Number two, like I can't sort through my own emotions because they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's, you literally have to sit down and like make an effort to like dig through everything and like start to sort through how you feel, what you think about this, what you think about that, how, you know, it's a lot to work through. So yeah.
And then I think also with us as Black women, when we see these things, we think about our families, we think about the people close to us, the loved ones that we have, you know, our fathers, our brothers, our friends, our spouses, and it hits a different way. You know, I mean, I was seeing my news feed, you know, just full of all of the women who were talking about their sons and what that felt like to now have to think about trying to protect, you know, not now because it's something that they always think about, but what that means for them to try to protect their sons. And then the fathers who are posting and, you know, talking about having to have this conversation with their boys, have these conversations with their girls, you know, it hits so much more different because on the one hand, you see it and you connect with the people who are going through those experiences because you have that connection. We have that connection as Black people in America, but then also you have that connection because you're thinking about your own family and your own friends who are close to you and what could happen on any given day to any one of them. Mm-hmm. And so that like fear and that anxiety, it weighs on your shoulders and it's hard. It is traumatic and overwhelming to mm-hmm. think about that all the time.
Yeah.
Right. I think there are like a couple of ways that fatigue gets manifested as well, right? Like Jazz was saying, like sleeping a lot. I think that's one of mine. I'm an escapist. Like if it comes down to a fight or flight, I'm catching flights. Like
racking up mileage points.
Girl, when I tell you I got a couple of free flights on standby right now. Really? And I can't fly. We can't fly right now. Like, ain't nobody opening their borders without severe penalty. So you can't escape it. I mean, you can sleep through it, but you're still there when you wake up. And so I think that trauma fatigue, the fear and the hopelessness and then coming out of Corona already, that's when you take to the streets. That's when you take to the streets. And we mentioned our cities, Charlotte, DC, St. Louis, all there are riots in all of these cities right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, that's textbook for me. I'm like, yeah, that's what happens next. next, you know, like that's the perfect storm.
It's the frustration that, like, what outlet do you have as a person of color in this country? And it's like, yeah, there's trauma fatigue, but then there's also, we can see into the future because we know how this plays out. We know how it's going to play out. We know how it has played out historically. Like, the news pops up, we see the video footage, we see someone lose their life in broad daylight for no reason, no help, no backup, like, just simply we watch it. Sometimes in real time, we watch this happen. And then we also watch the officer get off scot-free, like no punishment, no accountability, no charges in some cases, like
nothing. Some cases richer because now he's doing 2020 interviews and they paying for that.
Right.
As a case of Mike Brown.
Like, you have this cycle and that feeds into, that's trauma. That's traumatic to watch that whole entire cycle play out. And so you see almost daily now trauma happening to Black people. And it's like, here we go again. I know how this is going to end. Here we go again. It's happening again.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think about how the media is handling this? Jazz, I think I sent you an Instagram maybe yesterday. And I don't even remember what city it is, but they were protesting, you know, down in the city capital. And suddenly this pile of bricks appears out of nowhere. Remember I sent you that?
All out the sky.
And this lady's like, wait now, where these bricks come from? There's no construction going on here. Y'all trying to set us up. And yes.
There's a lot of shady business. And it's, the waters are so muddy right now because on one hand, you have people who are peacefully protesting and who are passionate, who are fired up, who are pissed off, but still peacefully protesting. And then you have people who are rioting and looting that are also pissed off, and all, rightfully so, like, of course, looting Target, whatever. But then you have instigators who are coming in, instigating and, you know, blowing up the situation. And sometimes that's what you're seeing on the news. So it's like, it's murky right now.
That's the word for media response, murky, murky AF. Yeah. How about in DC in particular, Delia, because I think like you guys always have a very unique situation when it comes to what's happening in America. How has the media response been there? Has it been like a federal response, or are you still getting like local news on it?
There's a lot of both. There's, you know, local news, there's federal news. You know, there's coverage of a lot of things going on, but, you know, even like you said, you know, there's things being instigated, and then the news kind of leans or tries to lean to one side and tries to push this narrative or this story about what is happening, which isn't always what's happening, or that's probably like a small, you know, section of what's really happening, but they try to make it look like, ugh, you know what I mean? But I do think that people all over in DC, in New York, in all the different places everybody's done. Like, that's just kind of the word. Like, people are done. Like, I'm over it. I'm done. Whose attention do I need to try to get right now for something to happen? I think that's just kind of where it is. And I'm hoping that it gets people's attention. You know what I mean? Like, if that's what has to happen to get people's attention, then let's go. Whose attention are we getting today?
Do you think that it's the right way to go about it?
I don't know. I'm not going out there. I'm not loot. Look, me personally, I'm not going out there to loot. I'm not going out there to riot. I'm not. But if I got friends out there, I fully 100% support them. 100%.
Yeah.
If that's what you want to do, that's 100%. You have my full support because I'm not about to tell you how to cope with your trauma.
Right. Ooh, girl.
And it begs the question, what is the right way? Like, I'm waiting
I'm not doing
to
that.
Tell me what is the right way to protest. Because with Colin Kaepernick, y'all weren't happy with that protest. With peaceful protesters, still not happy. They're still getting hosed down, sprayed up. Like, is the right way?
You know who always tells you that you're doing it wrong? People you protest against. Those are always ones, be the first ones out there telling you, oh, looting Target is not the answer. Yeah, well, kneeling wasn't the answer either, you know? I think protest by definition is whatever you need to do to get your point across. Like, it can't be a controlled right or wrong thing. I don't know. I'm on the fence. Cause like you said, Jazz, like trauma fatigue, you want to sleep it away. I can't fly. I can't sleep. And the riots have started here in St. Louis. You know, Ferguson is very fresh in our memory. And so for us, we're like, we stood on these streets already and y'all still didn't get it. This got global with Ferguson and we're back here again. Mm-hmm. And it's enough to make you be like, maybe I do need to stand out there. Maybe throwing a couple of Molotov cocktails is what needs to happen. Like, what's the worst they can do? Kill us? They already doing that?
Already.
Right. It's global now. Like, it's what is the right way? Is there a right way? Like, what does that even mean?
Because the right way, we won't protest at all. Like, if you were doing your job the right way,
we wouldn't have to do it.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's about people wanting their comfort and not wanting to be disturbed while they're watching their football. How dare you? How dare you
protest? How dare you remind us of your injustice while we try to enjoy
during football, the most American thing,
the holiest day of the year, Super Bowl Sunday.
People don't want that discomfort. They don't want to be confronted with the injustice and the ugly that is America. So what they're saying is protest behind closed doors. Go snuff that out. Like, they're not interested in seeing it because it makes them uncomfortable.
Which is why I think you've always mentioned, Jazz, like going forward, like how can this lead to significant change this time? How can we get out of the cycle that produces trauma fatigue? And you've mentioned allies. Like, people who are not Black, people who are not being murdered in broad daylight on video camera. You guys, our friends, you know, people we know. Like, y'all got to stand up with us and be like, we're not okay with this either. I think that's how the movement got as far as it did in the 60s. There were just a lot of allies there. I think now you've got, like, famous celebrities bailing out protesters that have been arrested. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Keep doing that, because money is powerful. Yeah, I think, Jasmine, if you could speak on that, like, why is allies important? And what's an ally? Because I think so, even in the comments, you see people saying, hey, I'm not Black. Is it okay for me to support this cause? Like, people are genuinely not sure if it's okay to even say nothing.
Yeah. An ally is someone who stands with the cause in solidarity. Like, you recognize that this is wrong, but not only do you recognize it, you're willing to say that it's wrong. You're willing to use your voice and whatever platform you have, whether that's social media, on your timeline, you're willing to say, to call it what it is and say, hey, this is not okay. This is injustice. This is wrong. And I'm not going to sit by and watch my fellow people, my fellow Americans get slaughtered in the streets without using my sphere of influence to do something about it. And I think for the average person who is non-Black, they probably have this idea in their head that they have to be a politician or, you know, hold an office of power in order to make change. But really, the change starts in your own household. It starts around your own dinner table. It starts with your children who are in school, with Black children who have a very different experience. Mm-hmm. It takes having those hard conversations with your kids, having those hard conversations with your extended family members, just about what is happening and, you know, what you can do to play a role to change the situation. So really, it's not as complicated as people make it out to be. It's not as big. It's not as uncomfortable. It takes reaching out to a minority friend that you have, a coworker, someone that you know. Hey, share with me your experience. Can you tell me a time when XYZ? Mm-hmm. It takes like that humility, that patience to learn, to listen, and to understand in order to become an ally and to start to make change from like a very basic level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And even if like you don't know what's going on or you feel like you're you can educate yourself. You can ask the questions. You can talk to people, and you can have compassion and listen, like you're saying, you know. And then, like you said, you start with yourself. You start with your household. You start with your family. You start with your job. You start with your community that you have. It doesn't have to be this like big thing, you know. I mean, I do think that it is the responsibility of the people who are in the room, you know what I mean, to make those changes. But for everyone else that's out there, for everyone else that's involved, it doesn't take that much. It mm-hmm. just takes you being able to just sit back and listen, hear us when we speak and when we express how we're feeling, and just let that be, mm-hmm. you know, and just let that be. And then say, you know, I hear you. I'm with you. I stand with you. I support you, mm-hmm. you know, what can I do? What can I do to help now? How can I continue to support you moving forward?
Mm-hmm. Right. I think too, what I would say to our non-Black male or female allies too is, you know, sometimes we speak without using words. And I think the biggest misconception about these riots and the protests that people don't get is that that is communication. That is us saying, hey, we are fed up, that we're tired, that we feel unheard. And so there are a lot of people who are like, well, I stand with Black Lives Matter, but I don't think that people should be protesting, and I don't think they should be rioting. And I don't think, and sometimes stand with Black Lives Matters means not, you know, condemning the way that we express our trauma, because that's all that is, you know, that's all that is. It's just people being very, very hurt, very scared, feeling betrayed by the system that was supposed to protect us. That's a breakdown in a social contract, and that breakdown was not initiated by people who are rioting and looting. That's the response to a break in the social contract. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta let that ride. As an ally, you gotta be like, hey, that's how they feel. I think
the protesting and the rioting and the looting is a small piece in the Black experience. If you don't agree with that, that's fine. There are other ways that you can support and understand and learn and find ways to agree or come to some sort of understanding that are outside of that. And I think because our media is so salacious, they're focusing on that to make that the forefront, to make that the story, you know, like, it's not necessarily all about that. So there are mm-hmm. other ways to connect to the Black movement, even if you disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's powerful. We were talking about media response, and I think some of the things that did kind of warm my heart when it comes to allies and things like that is all of the companies that got out in front of this that said, hey, Black Lives Matter. Like Netflix had a whole post about it.
Love that.
Yeah.
Which was well followed by Amazon Prime, but I'm like, Netflix did it first. Who else? Like Neutrogena. Like, it's a lot of like companies that are saying, hey, Black Lives Matter.
I think VH1. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Jazz, I think you were saying even like you were checking clergy and church houses. Do they call them church houses?
Wait a minute.
Houses of worship.
We went back to the 1950s for a second, didn't we?
I mean, we living it now. Is that true? When I see protesting for civil rights, I get confused about my timeline.
We know you grew up in a different era, girl. You. No. Yeah, I did. I specifically, a day or two ago, I specifically went on a couple of mega churches' Instagrams to see if they had put out a statement or made any type of post relating to these issues. And I was actually surprised to find that a lot of them had. And then I went in the comments. I said, let's see what the saints got to say, because it's one thing for the church leadership to post something, but it's another thing for the congregation to also support. So I was surprised to find that people were very supportive, were very understanding, empathetic, all that. And then also just on my personal timeline, seeing non-Black friends, seeing white friends posting like, hey, actually this is not okay, posting the hashtags, posting like tributes, you know, like all of that. Those things are small, but they're significant, because I feel like this is the first time where Black people haven't had to carry the full burden, and we see white people actually speaking out. We see people calling it what it is and saying, hey, this is not okay. I'm with my brothers and sisters. We need to be on the front lines with them. I saw a post that was like, Karens for Black Lives Matter, like Becky's here, and it was like this line of like white
girls. Oh, Becky,
like, bless her heart.
A lot, like every single post, every single mark, like it means a lot from our non-Black friends. It really does.
Mm-hmm. It's encouraging to see those things, even in the midst of knowing what the cycle might look like. Mm-hmm. And knowing what, you know, what we already kind of automatically think will happen next, it is encouraging to notice the differences in this cycle versus the last one, as many as there have been, you know. And so even seeing those posts on church websites or on, you know, our friends' pages, even hearing it being preached from the pulpit, I mean, that was something that was really encouraging to me, was that pastors are not just talking about it, let's say, on their Twitter or their Instagram or their website, but then they're actually standing up before their congregation. I mean, now via video because of Corona, but they're standing up and they're having these discussions outwardly to their entire community. And right. I think that's really powerful. And I think it's necessary that you know, churches are beginning to say, we need to have a voice in this. We can't just sit back and just allow what's happening out there, because what's happening out there affects the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. So you, at some point you have to address it. And so I think it's been really encouraging that there have been churches who are addressing those things from the pulpit. And then you do have people who are out there who are saying things, you know, and they're encouraged and they're compassionate and they're wanting to help and they're wanting to be a voice for us. You know, and I think that is really important and really powerful, because I honestly believe at the end of the day, it's going to take their voices more than it will take ours for this ship to turn around. I really do think that it's going to be the voices of the white Americans who are going to be able to say, this is not the legacy that we want to have for America. This is not the America that we believe in and love and want. This is not what we asked for and what we built for ourselves. So we're going to turn this thing around. And I think that it can't be on us as Black people to carry that. I think it has to be on them to say, okay, we're going to change this. So that's really encouraging to me that will hopefully move forward.
Man, I think that's a powerful thing to say out loud, is like, yo, non-Black people, this falls on you too, you know, this falls on you too. Mm-hmm. And for us all to take ownership of this nation. I think one thing you mentioned is like, we can predict how this is going to go, and it hasn't been going well. It's a very short cycle of a loop that gets repeated. It's like when you scratch your CD and then it just be like, remember CDs? And it ain't even scratched on your favorite song. It's stuck in some dumb ass song you don't even like. What if, so my question is, what if, like, what would it take in your opinion for this to turn out differently, for this to be significant, to lead to significant change? How can we break this loop?
It's gonna take, like we talked about, like, change at the basic level, change in your family, yeah, in your household, in your community, in your church, in your workplace, like all of these things where we interact with people who are different from us on a daily basis. It's going to take reaching out. It's going to take hearing some stories, sharing some experiences. I think a lot of what we're seeing now as far as like non-Black allies, I have a theory that people are more willing to engage with the movement because of coronavirus and because all of us have been stuck in the house for 2 to 3 months now. We've all been forced to spend time with our families, whether you like it or not, whether you feel that you love or like the people you live with, you're forced to be with them 24/7 now. So we've had a chance to reconnect as people. We've had a chance to reconnect with our humanity. And so with that, you know, coming out of a couple of months of doing that and then seeing this blatant injustice, it's like people are like, whoa, wait a minute, like that's not okay, you know? And so I think it shouldn't take a pandemic for that to happen, for people to have that realization that we too are people. But hopefully moving forward, people can be more willing to connect to the humanity of Black people. We're human. George Floyd was a human man, somebody's family member, somebody, you know, like
son and father. Yeah.
Yeah. These are not just animals out here being killed in the streets. These are people. We are people.
I mean, animals seem to be doing a lot better than Black people these days, right? Like, let that have been just a Labrador in the street. What? Outrage. Public outrage, you know?
I don't understand.
It's wild.
I think Julia spoke to this, too. That she said, you know, it's systemic because the system wasn't built for us. Remember, I think you were saying that before.
Yeah, like, it's... I was having a conversation with someone, or I heard some, I don't remember, but it was like, you know, the system is broken. The system's not working. And it was, the other person kind of came back and was like, no, the system is actually working the way it was designed. It's just, it was never designed for us, you know? And I think that that was eye-opening for me, because it was like, wow, you know, this system that we have here is really designed to keep us separate. Even though we're supposed to be, you know, equality for all, and we're supposed to be in that umbrella, it really wasn't when they wrote that, you know, years and years and years ago, we weren't in that thought process.
No,
you know,
we're not human.
Right. So the system is designed the way it's supposed to be used. And so it is going to take, I think it's going to take some real accountability on those people that are in those positions of public service. It's going to take some real accountability on a policy level for them to not do the things that they're doing anymore and not get away with the things that they're getting away with anymore. You know, I mean, it's going to take, like, you know, like Jazzy was saying, from a very basic level in terms of how you grow your mindset. But then it's got to go another step forward after that, you know. So then those people out there who still don't even have that mindset are just refusing to even have that mindset. Okay, fine. You can think and believe what you want to believe. However, if you do this, this is what then happens to you, right? There has to be that accountability and those checks and balances in place, because if not, then this is just going to continue to happen over and over and over again. And there is no accountability. I was going to say there's not enough accountability. No, there's no accountability at this point. Like, it's just not even there. So I think that there needs to be.
The body cams, that was a step for accountability. And it's like, where are we now? What progress has that yielded, these body cams that were supposed to stop police brutality? Like, where are we now? And I think what you said about accountability is huge. Like, you cannot be a public servant or, you know, be a person of influence or hold a position of power and do whatever you want. Kill somebody in broad daylight, because I can't go out there and kill somebody without any consequences whatsoever. Like,
yeah,
there has to be this sense of, okay, I'm a public servant. I'm here to protect and serve. That is literally my job. There have to be checks and balances, like you said.
Mm-hmm. I think too, with this being an election year, like, the system that we have been operating on was never designed for Black lives to matter, but we do, after much, much, much work, turmoil, and even death, have the right to vote now. I mean, we were the last, us three, we were literally the last group to get that right.
Women.
We were the last of the last. It was like, well, I guess y'all can do it now. But we have that right now, and it is an election year. And I think, you know, we don't have the motivation, or didn't have the motivation we did when Barack was running, but we have a system that was not designed for us, and it needs to be overhauled. And that comes with legislation, that comes with representation, that comes straight from us. And so I think what if for me is, what if Black women in particular ran in these races that are coming up this year. I would like to see Stacey Abrams become the VP. Like, we need a Black vice president. I would like to see all of us out voting and not just sitting back because we don't like the system or we feel like our vote doesn't matter. Then vote. If it don't matter, then it won't matter. But if it do, then we'll all be better for it, right? Yeah. So that's what I want to pose to our viewers and our listeners. Like, leave us a comment. Tell us, what do you think is necessary for this to change? Because there's enough videos, there's enough material out there that is articulating the problem that we are all traumatized and fatigued by, but there needs to be a call to action and then accountability for that action. And so we want to know, like, what do you guys think is going to take for this to change? Leave it in the comments below. Jazz, D-Money, I mean, we back. We came out the gate swinging, right?
Woo! Let's go. Showtime
is not been around. Silence is not an option. We got something to say about it. We gonna harass y'all until change comes, because we can't sit silent no more. So yeah, we're gonna be following this. We're gonna be posting. You guys can resubscribe to all our platforms, comment, and yeah, we're gonna be in touch. Till next time.
Until next time.